It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello. Hello, and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. 4 minutes past nine, and it's Tuesday the 6th of May. How are you all keeping? I really hope you're very well indeed, and I hope you had a nice weekend. And it was a busy weekend for many different reasons right across the Northwest. We've got a lot to talk about, and we want you involved in the conversation throughout the course of the morning. If there's an issue you want to raise, something you want to pass on, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, give us a call too if you wish, and 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. You can watch the show, of course, by logging on to our website and clicking watch live, or you can watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and on the X platform. Community Guard information come up after 10. We're going to be reflecting on the fire in Inishowen, which has devastated one of the cultural hearts of the area. We'll talk about that and so much more besides. But let's look at the newspapers this morning first. And the Irish Times, their lead story is Israel's plans. They're literally going in to take Gaza and going to stay there for as long as they like. Taoiseach Simon Harris has described as alarming the reports of a planned extensive and military operation by Israeli forces in Gaza. Mr. Harris, who is Minister for Foreign Affairs, said in a statement yesterday that such a move would result in further deaths, casualty and untold suffering for the Palestinian population, who already face a dire humanitarian situation. His comments follow a decision by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his security cabinet. They voted to scale up the offensive against Palestinian militant group Hamas in Gaza to the point of seizing the entire enclave and holding its territories. An Israeli official said yesterday the cabinet unanimously approved a plan to expand military operations in Gaza and to call up tens of thousands of Israeli Defense Force reservists. The expanded military campaign will entail seizing territory in Gaza, remaining there, moving the Gazan population south, denying Hamas the ability to distribute humanitarian supplies, and carrying out powerful strikes against militants, and they claim against militants, but whomever also might be in the way seems to be on the agenda there as well. History will reflect on what we're seeing in real time right now, and it won't reflect on it favourably. There's just no doubt about that, because we can see what's going on right now. The Irish Independent today, I don't know what you think of, because there's statistical facts, but there's also sort of, you know, what people feel or what they believe. But apparently, according to The Independent today, Ireland's suicide rate has fallen by a quarter over a 20-year period, the cabinet will be told today. Now, that sounds good, and I hope it is the case. I really do hope it is the case. Do I feel it is the case? I'm not quite sure. I was, a fully grown adult 20 years ago, and you kind of know what's going on around you, and a fully grown adult now, and it doesn't feel like there's been that big a drop, but clearly these are statistics, and I can only go by what I feel, which is just personal. The cabinet will be advised of the figures by the Health Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill and Junior Minister Mary Butler. From 2000 to 2021, the most recent year for which official figures are available, Ireland's suicide rate fell by 28%. The rate per 100,000 fell from 12.9 in 2000 to 9.2 in 2021, the 11th lowest figure in the EU, according to Eurostat, the European Commission Department for Statistical Information. Preliminary figures for 2023 recorded 302 deaths by suicide in Ireland, the lowest figure for more than 20 years. So that's the year before last. Across the entire country, it's claimed that 302 people died by suicide. The figures will be revised upwards with the conclusion of coroner investigations because there is a significant time lag in the reporting of deaths by suicide. However, the overall decline in the figures has been welcomed, while acknowledging even one death by suicide is one too many. And I just hope, because this is these are the figures that determine sort of resources and where money is spent and where interventions are put in place where they can be. These figures are used for that. And apparently, over 20 years, there's been a drop of over a quarter in those dying by suicide. 086 60 25,000 if you have a view on that. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. And the government must act to address Ireland's soaring abortion numbers. An anti-abortion rally in Dublin has been told. The call was made as a large crowd assembled outside Leinster House yesterday after the annual March for Life in the city. There were 10,033 abortions in Ireland in 2023, according to official data from the Department of Health. This was up on the 8,156 terminations in 2022. That's a rise of 23% in just 1 year. The figures for 2024 are expected to be published in the coming weeks. The rally outside the Oireachtas was told there was a need for immediate steps by the government to stop the upward trend. Ellis Mulroy from the Pro-Life Campaign, the organisation that staged the event, told the crowd at Molesworth Street, "At the heart of public life in Ireland today, there is a disconnect, a denialism, an indifference and a total lack of accountability that has to be confronted and broken." So I suppose the question is you know, many of you chose to vote one way or other in the abortion referendum that took place. When you did so, did you believe that in 1 year, in 2023, 10,033 abortions would take place? Is that what you voted for, or is that more than you voted for, or did you just vote because it's a person's right? If you want to send us a text in relation to that, feel free to do so. I picked this story out because you never know what the ramifications might be for Donegal. Of course, you know, I think film production and the shooting of films is on the up. There's an awful lot of work goes on behind the scenes within Donegal County Council to promote Donegal as a film destination. So maybe these latest announcements by US President Donald Trump on tariffs, who's to say what impact it may or may not have? US President Donald Trump sent Irish film executives into a panic after he announced a 100% tariff on movies produced outside of his country. Movie and TV productions have been exiting Hollywood for years. They now favour local locations with tax breaks that make filming cheaper, with Ireland being one of many countries to benefit. All major media companies, including Disney, Netflix and Universal Pictures, film overseas in countries such as New Zealand, Canada and the UK. Now, there is no information as to what is it on scripts? Is it on production? Is it on actors? It is not clear. And maybe nothing will come of it, but just to keep an eye on it, because as I say, who's to say what the ramifications might be here? Now, I don't know what parents might take their children into a pub and buy them non-alcoholic beer. So I don't know what this story is. I know what the story is about, but I'm not sure how big an issue it is. But we'll read on and see. Parents can technically buy non-alcoholic beers in pubs and give them to their underage kids under current laws, the Justice Minister has confirmed. Minister Jim O'Callaghan has now been urged to provide clarity or update laws around the sale of 00 products to minors, with Alcohol Action Ireland telling the Irish Mirror that there is currently a loophole. The information was provided to Labour's Justice spokesperson Alan Kelly, who asked Minister O'Callaghan in a parliamentary question if publicans are permitted to serve adults alcohol-free branded beer, why they intend the beer to be for consumption by children who are accompanied by adults. In response, Mr. O'Callaghan stated current licensing laws provide for a prohibition on the purchase, provision or consumption of intoxicating liquor by a person under the age of 18 years. He added, this prohibition does not apply to alcohol-free alternatives. Now, again, I can't imagine any parents bringing a child in and buying them a 00 Guinness. Maybe it is happening, I don't know. It's a loophole that's there. Is it being exploited? I don't know. But sure, maybe you've seen 8-year-olds drinking lager. I doubt it. But anyway. And offering accommodation in exchange for sex will become a criminal offence under plans to be discussed by Cabinet today. Now, this is one of those things that you can't imagine that anyone could be so low as to offer accommodation to someone based on receiving sexual favours, but also too that people might find themselves so desperate that they might take up that offer. But it does happen, and these offers are being put out there on websites, and they use code words so that they can appear on legitimate websites as well. But it's going to be offence, and so it should be. Offering accommodation in exchange for sex will become a criminal offence under plans to be discussed by Cabinet today. It follows a commitment in the programme for government to criminalise those who seek sex for rent. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan will inform Cabinet of plans to address what has been branded as highly exploitative behaviour by the introduction of two specific criminal offences. I was also interested to listen to Donna Marie's story there about third-party software being used to scrape cancellations off the RSA website. Do you remember I've said a few times on this programme, if you're a regular listener, that that was an option that was there, and thankfully Aaron was able to get a cancellation because, I'll be honest with you, I committed far too much time in trying to get a cancellation. There's a process you can go through. But apparently now third-party apps are doing this on behalf of people seeking them. I suppose I'm not sure if it's a bad thing or not, because I mean, if people are desperate and they're getting their driving tests, or are they being sold on? I don't know what's going on with it, but it just that's a little option people had if they were desperate to get a driving license, and it's not a fair playing field if you're trying to do it manually and there's third party software doing it. It kind of ruins it for everyone except the few that managed to get those. But as I say, before it was being done by apps, it was an open and fair playing field, but not so anymore. And we're so desperate up here too. Our waiting lists are 28 weeks, I think, in North Donegal for a driving test now. That means if you got your 12 lessons and you applied right now, you could be, it could be November, December before you even get your driving test. Crazy stuff. And yet we hear all the while that new driving testers are being employed and distributed, and still it seems to make no impact. But anyway, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. You can call us as always on 074 91 25000. Most of us learned with great sadness of a fire at the iconic Doe Famine Village on the Inishowen Peninsula. We all know it as one of the Northwest's most famous tourist attractions, but it's been heavily damaged by fire. Pat Doherty is owner of Doe Famine Village. Pat, thanks for joining us. As I often say in situations like this, I wish we were talking about anything else but this. You must all be devastated, are you?
Aye, thanks, Q. That's been a shock. No, just, no, shock just explains it. And it happened on Saturday, so about 3:30. A neighbour noticed a fire outside the Famine Village, you know, it, way at the very far end. And by the time we got it, no one could prepare for it. It was too strong, and quickly spread through one section of the Famine Village, and totally destroyed that. So the buildings that would be destroyed would be all to do with the famine, the safe house, the Orange Hall, and to do with the travelling community here in Donegal, that section, and then our local history too.
Pat, I'm just trying to soak it all in. It's absolutely devastating. And it started and then spread so quickly.
It started on an outside, like a shed, and spread quickly. No grasses around that area and all that there, so quickly got going with the good weather too. And but it's beside it, so there was no stopping of it then when it got going. By the time we got it, you know, it was too strong a fire. The fire brigades came, four brigades came, and they got a stop before we came into the thatched houses. So they got a stop at that point. So they saved that only for the fire brigades making their way here. And no, there'd been a lot of other damage because the other houses burned too, locals and neighbours' houses, only for the fire brigades.
Unbelievable.
It was a big fire.
And in terms of building back, because, you know, as difficult it is at the moment, can it be restored?
Well, a lot of the the whole thing was built on stories. We started off in our own home house, and we'd tell them how we lived. And then we simple things, you know, people would come. We started back in 1997, and then there weren't many tourists about because the troubles were strong in Northern Ireland, and tourists didn't come to any show in that time. Very few. There were no, same as any other part of the world today where there's trouble. So So people were avoiding Inishowen, they were avoiding Derry. And then the people that would come, you know, wee simple things like, you know, they'd be driving along the road, see a lot of cars at the house, and they'd want to know what was happening there. And you tell them somebody had died, was awake, and they couldn't understand that. So we added the wake into it. That's how that began, and the story of the wake. And then as the time went on, we connected the wake to other parts of the world, and this whole story of being buried alive and the fear, sitting around hoping for the person to wake up. So and that's how he got his name. So that's how that story began. And then, because it was 1987, we put the name on it of Famine Village, because that was the anniversary of the famine back then, 150 years. And then we started to tell the story of the famine. And then things were different back then too, you know, because people were coming from different communities and they had different views on the famine.
Mm.
So we started to connect that then with world famine and how it seemed to from both sides. And then the wee simple thing then was, you know, things were improving on then, and people would come in and say, you know, what, they come around the 12th of July and they want to know why should they avoid Northern Ireland today, because the marches were strong that time, so they want to know what an Orange Hall was. So went into the Orange Order and decided to build an Orange Hall, which seemed a crazy thing then. And they all became involved in it then. Different lodges, you know, started off White Rock in Belfast, which is a strong loyalist area. They came in first and decorated part of it, and then other lodges got involved in that. And then what happened then was the Republican side weren't really happy then with the Orange Hall being there. And so went to a few Republicans, one man from Donegal, a man from Ballyvafay, Eddie Gallagher, and he came up with the idea then of a safe house to balance the story out. And so both sides could tell their own story. So the safe house started, and it was the time of the peace process, so we told the whole story of the peace thing. And then at the very end, we had the names of everybody who died through the Troubles. And families would come, and some of them would, you know, they'd read their brother, their sister, their mother, their father was on the wall. And McGinley's bus came in with a group from England one day, and they're all English people. And this lady read the names, and she was very upset. And what she's seen on the board was her son. He was a British soldier. It was the first time she'd seen the name. So there's things like that you remember, you know, from certain days. And
yeah. I mean, it's a life's work, really, that's got into this to create this living history. It's just hard then to sort of replicate that, isn't it? Because it's grown in such an organic way. And I think the way you talked of the way things were introduced in response to reactions from people outside of the Dole Famine Village, that made it even more authentic. I don't know how, if that's the right word.
Everything we did was always a question people asked.
You
know, the visitor would ask, "No, why do you do this and why do you do that and why did you starve? Have you living beside the sea?" And we try to answer them questions for them, and that's what they come to hear. You know, and some of them just come to know can you afford to live here? No, they see all the big houses in Donegal and they want to know what they work at. So that's what things tours are interested in. It's not always about what happened 200 or 300 years ago. They want to know what's happening in today's Ireland too. Right?
Very sadly.
And you try to help them that way, and that's what...
Yeah, I was going to say, just in the very early hours after this, unfortunately, or I don't know what the actual motivation was. Maybe it was well-meaning people. A number of GoFundMe pages were established. There's one official one now, and we'll share that out there. And people have very generously already raised over €32,000. You wouldn't have had insurance. Would it have been hard to insure some of this stuff?
I definitely, you wouldn't get insured for what we're at now. They're thatched houses and, and if you did get insured, you know, it wouldn't be viable. You know, we were the last self-sustaining one in Ireland at the museum. You know, it completely depends on what comes in at the door. And we didn't really bother grants for nothing like that in the past. It survived on its own, so you kept having to try a wee bit harder to get people there. And but it worked. No, it worked that way. But just you have to put a lot of time into it. We work 7 days a week. Same as a lot of people self-employed around Donegal. You know, it doesn't work 9 to 5 doesn't work. What comes under the towel is what you survive on.
I mean, the answer to this question might be different in a month as it is now, because we're only Tuesday, right? And this is all really, everyone's only really coming to terms with what happened now. But I mean, obviously people are donating generously. People want to back you in continuing into the future. Pat, have you been able to even consider what you hope to do going forward?
Well, we're looking at, can we get, you know, part of the thatch cottages are all here, so we're looking at, can we maybe get that open now for later on in the summer, and then take it from there then. But at the moment, it's more of a shock. No, it's hard to think that way.
That's what I was thinking. Thinking before I even asked the question, because it's just so new, and you could wake up tomorrow full of vigour and plans, but it's just right now. It might be quite difficult. In situations like this, and one of the things people get comfort with is the community and the generosity of people. Has that been helping you, Pat, through it? So generously, and everyone expressing the importance of this thing that you've created.
It's big help, surely. Even on that day, first is the fire service, then the Gardaí, and then there was an ambulance crew here just in case something went wrong. They got, and then with the neighbours all came in, and we had a full field of neighbours. And I filled it with tractors, slurry tankers, diggers. They'd all lined up. And so there's a big response there, right? That's what you remember, that type of thing.
And I suppose we have to be thankful too, don't we, that that we're talking about sort of structural damage here and not any loss of life either for those that may have been about, or the emergency services too, because, it could be perilous enough.
That's right. It's all down to that there, that nobody's injured.
All right.
Then, as you say, the GoFundMe, that the Packaway started the GoFundMe one. And thanks to him. And a lot of people have contributed to that, so I thank them too. But it's hard to understand. A lot of children putting in the money into it.
Mm.
Children know it, are going to school. It's wee simple things like that makes you really think.
Yeah. Okay. Because what you've created is so important that people want to help, and also too, it's to support you and your family. That's why people do these things, Pat. It's a testimony to you and to what you've created and the importance of it. And I'm optimistic that when the dust settles, you'll build back stronger, bigger and stronger than ever.
Thanks.
Pat, I'll let you go.
Thank you.
All right, take care of yourself.
Thanks so much, and thank everybody else too, and everybody who helped out.
All right, look after yourself, Pat, please. Thanks very much indeed. That's Pat Doherty, owner of Dauphamid Village. Now, as many of you know, as we've just been discussing, much of Dauphamid Village has been destroyed by that fire on the 3rd of May. There is a GoFundMe page which has been set up, and it currently stands at over €32,000, and it's John McGonigal is organising the fundraising appeal, so you can search that out. We'll link it on our Facebook page in case you want to help Pat in the rebuilding process. As I say, it's just a little bit early perhaps even to be talking about that, because everything is so raw, but there are a few fake pages out there trying to take advantage of the fire. Just be cautious there. As I say, it is, anyone can create a GoFundMe. So maybe, what you do see, particularly in other parts of the world, is that people sort of want to be the first in there, or they could be in there just trying to exploit this tragedy. There is one official GoFundMe page. It's Dauphamid Village, started by John McGonigal. It's at over €32,000, and you can be assured that that money goes towards assisting Pat in the rebuilding process, which inevitably will start just as everyone comes to terms with this. Councillor Martin McDermott's with me as well. I let Pat go there, obviously, because it's a tough old time, Councillor. And, the Dauphamid famine village has been huge for the local area and tourism in Inishowen.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Yeah, it has been. It's, you know, it's one of the most iconic places that we have here, particularly here in North Innishowen. Pat has built a business there that has brought thousands and thousands of people to North Innishowen, that has helped, you know, businesses, hotels, B&Bs, restaurants. What Pat has done has helped all those people over a lot of years. And Pat himself has helped a lot of people in tourism around here over the last number of years, where Pat was always there for them to help them in any way that he could. And I think that's important that we're there now to help Pat to do whatever we can to get the Falmouth Village back up and running again, because, Greg, we don't have enough places in Donegal or any showing for tourism. And, you know, the Falmouth Village was something that was known all over Ireland and all over the world, and it brought a lot of people. It brought people every day of the week to this part of the peninsula. And we have to make sure that we do everything we can to get back on his feet again and give him a chance to get the old Falmouth Village back up and running.
Yeah, and so well kept, so beautiful too, when you see the side-by-side pictures of what was there and the havoc wreaked by the fire. It's really devastating because, you know, we heard Pat outline the time that went into this, the time and the organic nature of how it developed. You know, it's, you can't put a price on that. You can't insure that. You know, you can't buy that. That's a life's work, a life's dedication.
No, anybody that knows Pat and Magella and all the family out there will know that, you know, they put their life into this 7 days a week. They put everything into the Falmouth Village and the Santa at Christmas, and, you know, it was just such an iconic place. And again, you couldn't underestimate how important it is to this area. And how important it is to tourism, because, you know, so many people and so many families and so many businesses depend on tourism. They depend on that summer month to keep them going for the rest of the year. You know, and Pat has been in the middle of that for a long number of years. So it's so important that we get this back up and running again and do everything we can to help Pat. And I think, you know, you see, like on Saturday, when the news broke, everyone was devastated. Everyone around the whole area, not just in Innishowen and Donegal and around Ard. So you can see how, you know, Pat himself and the Falmouth Village has so important to people, and you know, you couldn't put into words how people were feeling that night. Everywhere you went, people were talking about it, and everybody was of the same opinion. You know, we have to try and do something to make sure that's back up and running again. So, you know, it will take a few weeks to get that to settle in. But we certainly will work with Pat and do, and I'm sure every country is the same, and every person that's involved in tourism, Falls Ireland, you know, ourselves, Donegal County Council, everybody will help whatever way we can over the next number of weeks to try and come up with some plan that will help to get Pat back on his feet.
Well, that's it, because at this point, often, and unfortunately, I've had an opportunity to speak to a lot of people after devastating fires, it's very hard to see any sort of, you know, future or what have you, because it literally is just so raw. But what does happen normally, and I hope it's the case here, is that as time passes, you know, that pathway to a return becomes more clearer, and there certainly will be a will, and there is, hopefully, with the money being raised away, to return it to maybe even bigger and better. Who's to say? But just as I say, it's hard to fathom that now, but hopefully that optimism will come.
When you put your life, and Pat and the families put their life into this, starting off from where they were to where they are today. And, you know, when you put your life into something and it's taken away that quickly, it's devastating. But as you say, Greg, hopefully over the next, you know, week or two, that things will settle down and we can get a plan in place and hopefully, as you say, come back with something bigger and better.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, Councillor Martin McDermott there. And the GoFundMe target is going up all the time. People are so generous. €32,547 has been raised. Please be careful if you are donating, because anyone can start a GoFundMe page, and a few have started them, and there is the potential to sort of take money off people, and it will never find its way to Dofamin Village. There is one official one, and John McGonigal of the Wild Alpaca Way has started it, and as I say, people are donating generally. There's a 100,000 euro target, and they're a third of the way there, exactly 33% of the way there. We'll share it on our social media so you can trust that link, and if you want to help raise money. It's not just local people, of course, affected by this. Hi there. We're sad to see that Dofamin Village has had a devastating fire that has destroyed so much of the museum. Is there an official GoFundMe page? And if so, can you put a link on your page, which we are? It's such a shame, but if it could be rebuilt, it would be fantastic. We are from England, but my mum and dad were from Derry and Rathmullen, and I've been coming to see my relations in Derry and visiting Donegal since I was 8, so for almost 40-odd years. We've brought our children over to show them Irish history from all sides, and also our English friends. So it is important that it rises from the ashes to educate the generations to come. Hope you can help. Jerry Flynn sent that in. And Jerry, yep, check it out. We'll get that to you. Right, back with more after these. So as you would know, there is a new operation model in place now here in Donegal as it relates to An Garda Síochána. The Donegal division has introduced its business service functional area, which we're told has reduced the amount of administrative activities held by operational members, and the remaining functional areas kicked in towards the end of last month. Each functional area is led by an acting superintendent, with the exception of the business services functional area, which is led by an assisted principal. So what does this actually mean? We know the GRA are opposed to it. They're concerned about it. We know other branches of An Garda Síochána, the Garda sergeants and inspectors, have their concerns as well. But what does it all mean? Paul Wallace is former Provisional Crime Prevention Officer, or former Crime Prevention Officer, a national executive member of the Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, and he joins us on the show now. Paul, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so in real terms, what's happened? What has changed? What has changed between the way this county is policed now versus, say, 5 years ago?
Well, 5 years ago, we had the five district headquarters in Letterkenny, Buncrana, Milford, Glenties and Ballyshannon. And now with the new model, that's going to reduce down. It's just changing the model. It goes into functional areas more, and your centres will be Buncrana, Letterkenny and Ballyshannon, with Milford going off the map as such. The backstory to this, is, I suppose, it was the first modernisation of organisational structures in the Guards in over 100 years. It came on the back of a report, the Commission of Future Policing in Ireland, which was commissioned by government. Kathleen O'Toole, a former commissioner from the US, led out on this report and produced the report with his findings, and it was adopted by government, because a lot of people are going around saying it's a Drew Harris model, a Commissioner Drew Harris model, but it's not. It's coming from government, accepted it, and government adopted it. And when, in my time on the National Executive of the AGSI, we would have raised concerns. I particularly had the focus in relation to Donegal, because Donegal is unique, as the saying says up here, we're different, but it is unique. There's no surrounding divisions. And initially they were putting Donegal in its Sligo Leitrim, which certainly would not have worked, because you would have had a reduction in resources, or a dispersal of resources as such. So the government announced in August 2019 that they were changing from 28 divisions down to 19. Then they put it up to 21 again, because Donegal was left as a standalone division. COVID intervened and nothing much happened over that time. But now Donegal is last on the list as such. And what they're saying is the divisions have to be self-sufficient for operational administration purposes and all of that. But, it's the topography and the geography of Donegal makes it a difficult area to police anyway, because you have populated areas around the coast, and you have mountains in the middle, and you have islands, populated islands, and all of that. So this model really doesn't take cognizance of that at all. And by centralization of resources, centering them in Letterkenny or whatever, it means that there's longer response times. It's going to take when people ring the guards, they normally have tried every other solution. It's normally a call of last resort a lot of times. So, and you would expect the resources to be there within a reasonable time. Mm. What they are saying officially, that it's based on a community policing model. But like, if it's based on a community policing model, the community need to see people out visible in their community. And the feedback that's coming nationally, not alone here, is that the guards, you don't see them, you don't know them, you know, they're covering large areas, that sort of thing. Then we have the other problem then, that has been well documented in fallen numbers, people resigning, people leaving, people retiring early and all of that. And you can't do more with less. It's in business, I suppose that's a sort of a by rule or a
To try and help me understand in relation to this, let's presume, and we know we don't, let's presume we had the same Garda numbers now as we did 5 years ago. And I really want to sort of tease out how this model is actually working. What has changed that means we see less Gardaí out and about, if you know what I mean? Or we also have to factor in now that your calls are triaged down the country as well before you even get a unit dispatched to you. But my understanding is that there's more, not my understanding, what I've been told, is that there's more Gardaí out and about. And when they're responding to calls, they know exactly where that patrol car happens to be, and whichever patrol car is closest can react quickest. You know, that they're not necessarily responding from Glenties, but there's a car around Bunbeg that can get to, you know, Main Street Dunloe quicker than if it was dispatched from Glenties, for an example. So that's how we're being sold it. What is the reality compared to that?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what's been sold and that's what's been said. And the cars are tracked now. The calls go into a call centre in Galway. And I suppose initially that's causing some problems too, that people are, they're not able to pick up on the local pronunciations and things like that. But I suppose that's something that will be ironed out in time. A lot of police forces have gone down that road where you have the central allocation of the resources going out. But yeah, and you have the cars are tracked and they can see on the screen exactly where they are. But like sometimes 20 miles in Donegal won't take you 20 minutes. It could take you 35, 40 minutes, depending on the road network. And when there was a district headquarters in Glenties, then it was amalgamated in with Milford, we would have pointed out that they actually had picked the wrong location there, that the other district headquarters should have been either in Dunloe, Bunbeg or Fulcara, probably Bunbeg, because it was bang centre in the most densely populated rural area in Western Europe, back over surveys over the years. You also have an island community that needs servicing and all that, and you would have been able to put in extra resources. But it's grand on paper to say, oh well, there's a call in Dunloe, but the car is actually in Dunfanaghy. Mm. Like that's a 45 minute journey in any man's terms, and the road network doesn't, you see. And that's, I suppose, case in point is when Chrysler happened, what did we see? We've seen a great turnout of emergency personnel there to deal with a tragic event, and you had ambulances coming out of Northern Ireland, you had the fire brigade, but the guards were there on their own. Mm. And you see, this is where they don't seem to get it. And this is no reflection, and I should say, on our local Garda management, which are excellent, but they're handled a model to deal with, you know. And just 1 second, they're handled a model that they have to deal with, and implement on the ground. But what we're saying, or what was said, I shouldn't say what we're saying, when last January the AGSI conducted a questionnaire or a response from their members, and what the key findings there was resource challenges. 96% people of the respondents said there was insufficient numbers. Mm-hmm. Community policing concerns, 82% said there's not that high visibility policing. The size of the divisions, the three-county model wasn't working, and 98% called for review. Now, the guards had done their own response or survey back in May 24, but they never released the outcome because obviously they didn't want
wasn't
to put
favorable
it out in
necessarily.
The public arena.
So if we were better resourced in this county, is this a better policing model than what it replaced?
I suppose time will tell, but you know, at the review would take into cognizance of the topography and the geography and the size. Mm. You know, like policing in the Western Seaboard of Ireland, or policing in Ireland, is probably, they talk about UK models and that, probably police Scotland is the closest model to us, because they have large centres of population, they have coastline, they have islands, they have all of that. And they have said that it didn't work with them. And now they're looking at going back. But we seem to be always in this country, we adopt a thing, and once it's adopted, we're not able to adjust it, review it, or change it in any way. The guards that you speak to will say the level of accountability, the level of recording that's there is keeping people tied to keyboards all the time. Mm-hmm. Even though we were told that by bringing in all these Garda staff people would help. It certainly probably has helped from what they call business functionality, you know, in relation to routine administration and all of that. But like, police people are outdoor people dealing with the public, dealing, and that's where you know, the first commissioner
but
said,
you don't
achieve anything by force of arms, just by the moral authority of the people. So the people have to be listened to. Our politicians have to listen to the people on the ground in Donegal that feel they're not getting the service.
The last question in relation to this, for the purpose of this conversation, we're effectively a peninsula. We've got a different policing authority to our right. We've got the sea to our left. We're going to talk a little bit later on about cars coming into the area in the likes of Bridgend and Muff and other places, and doing donuts and driving crazy, and they clearly are aware of response times and what have you, right? So that's potentially the thin edge of the wedge. So if people can feel they can come up in here and you know, drive like a film around our towns and villages persecuting people, and they know they can get away really without getting caught, you know, what about then the rest of it? How exposed are our coasts to drug smuggling, for an example? We've already seen, you know, millions of euro washing up, but also just basic criminality. Criminals will move. You know, if we know it, they know it. So how concerned would you be as a former member that, A, we're seeing sort of the resources already being exploited, but on the more serious element of crime, we're going to see more of that?
Yeah, well, you see, I suppose when you go on talking about things like this, you're actually putting ideas in people's heads, and it's very hard.
These people know themselves. They know themselves.
Yeah, well, I know, but I spent 20 years, as you know, out dealing in the community, and that's the only basis when Caroline rang me that I said I'd come on, because, you know, it's very easy to come on and be critical and say this isn't working, that isn't working. Well, what are the solutions? But, you know, you can see that events in Donegal, that the guards have policed, like the Irish Open up in Ballyliffin a number of years ago, the Donegal Rally, which is a major event. When the resources are put in and the money is spent, the response is good. But it's the day-to-day, it's the 50 other weeks of the year where you just where you're expecting a car in Chrysler to call to a call in Dunloe. Now, the advent of air codes and that have made people easier to locate and that sort of thing, which is, and that's all good. But as you said, we are a peninsula here. We are unique. And really, I think what we were trying to articulate at the time was that the model should be divisional specific. You know, it should be like a toolkit for, as I said about Bunbeg, it would make sense that a centre would be in Bunbeg. And I'll be not be very surprised that in 5 years' time you won't have a large policing centre in Bunbeg, because they will realise when something goes wrong that we didn't get this right. We can't manage that in Letterkenny. It's like the armed support, they're based in Ballyshannon. They're in the wrong location. They're in a grand location to service Sligo and Leitrim, but they're not in the right location for Donegal, because you know yourself, being from Lahey, it's a journey from Lahey or Ballyshannon to any part of Donegal once you go north. So, you know, that's only one simple point. Armed response is great, but it's not much good if it's going to take it an hour and a quarter to be there, no more than what you referenced there, the Diffin around a roundabout down in Bridgend. That's no reflection on the local guards.
No, of
the local guards were probably trying to cover and answer calls from Malinhead to Burnfoot across to Moville. You know, sure, Buncrana District, as it stood before a couple of weeks ago, before this new model came in, is bigger geographically than the size of County Louth. which is a division on its own. You know, so, like, the reviews have been called. We would have, I remember very well, remember the day we had a meeting in Dublin. Deputy Commissioner John Toomey was at the meeting at the time. And we explained, I explained about the distances from West Donegal. Like, when you look at distances from Letchimica Ward, which is the furthest part of Milford District, is 56 kilometres from Milford. So if you have a prisoner or drunk driver or whatever it is from Letchimica Ward, you're talking an hour to get them to their place of detention. So, like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, OK. Paul, listen, thanks so much for accepting our invite and help us understand it a little bit better. I do appreciate it.
But sure got there.
No, you're good. Thanks so much. That's Paul Wallace, former crime prevention officer, of course, and a former national executive member of the Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, with a very valuable insight into the potential workings or not of the new policing model, which is fully rolled out here now, I believe, in County Donegal. On the 10,000 abortions yearly, as the local historian Joe Kelly said about Ireland, in the years after the yes vote, the nation will eventually relearn all the things we already know but had forgotten. The penny's dropping that this government and opposition have been destroying common sense. Why is Greg saying the council's film office is hardworking? They don't answer phone calls or emails. I can only go by my interaction with them. But listen, if you're having issues in that regard, let us know more. Disgusted to hear the Strand Hotel in Ballyliffin may become an iPass centre. The owner has no regard for other businesses in the area who will no doubt be affected if this goes ahead. Shame on all business people and politicians making money out of these iPass centres. They're not wanted in Ireland. No politicians locally making money out of it, but I think I know who you're referencing. We're going to be covering that story, of course. I suspect, having gone through council documentation as it relates to applications for iPass centres, I would be very surprised, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen. We'll do the story and we'll see where things go, but I'd be very surprised if permission was given in that area, in that building, for an iPass centre by the local authority. But as I say, I can't preempt that, and we'll keep our eye on it, and we'll be discussing it in a little bit more detail a little later on. Inishowen and Donegal should not have iPass centres, and a housing estate in Donegal getting modular homes built for migrants. That's another story we're looking into. I was sent to, it's just one person saying it. I'm not saying it's not true, but I'd like to get a little bit more detail in relation to that. It's not fair. Should think of the defective concrete block houses, give the places to them and build modular homes for them. Shame on the government. Well, the government ruled out modular homes for defective concrete block homes for some reason. I don't know why. But as I say, I've had a number of reports of modular homes going in Donegal. We'll check that out and bring any information we can get to you. 086 60 25,000. That, of course, is our WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices.